What's up, friends? Welcome into another episode of Tables, Tailgates, and Top Loaders. So happy to have you all aboard for this episode. I'm your host, TB. I hope you all had a fantastic Labor Day weekend. It's so nice to wake up on a Monday and not have to get up at 3 a.m. and go to a job that you really can't stand anymore. So thank you all for stopping in and checking out the 3T's podcast. So much to get to today, so let's not waste any time. We are starting with Wrestling Fanatics, Wrestling Marks. How are we feeling? Fresh off the heels of Sunday's Clash in Paris. That's what I want to start with. Did you all check this pay-per-view out? This is the last one that's going to be on the Peacock app. It was okay. Some general thoughts to begin. I thought, number one, the stage was awesome. If you got a chance to see it, they built a replica Eiffel Tower, and the whole backdrop behind that was a Vincent van Gogh kind of Starry Night themed tapestry that they had written Clash in Paris in. It was awesome. And I'm thinking, as we watched this, my wife and I were watching this, I'm like, this is better than the SummerSlam set they put together, because I thought the SummerSlam set was trash. It was basically three levels of LCD screens and nothing else. And so the fact that they go to Paris, and this is supposed to be a lower level PLE, I thought they knocked this out of the park. It looked awesome, especially with the main event and the John Cena match. The entrances looked sick. On the screens behind the Eiffel Tower, I thought the firework displays, the light shows, it looked great. So hats off, WWE. Y'all crushed the set design for this. Other thoughts? The crowd was all in on this thing. Now, I know there's been times in the past where it's SmackDown or it's Monday Night Raw, and you get the sense with some of these overseas European international crowds where you get the sense that they kind of want to take over the show with their chants and everything. And sometimes this is true. I thought yesterday it was a great mix, right? Because I think the crowd was perfect. They were singing along to your top superstar songs when they were coming down to the ring. I thought they had good energy the whole night. I just thought, here's a situation where the crowd is actually contributing and not hijacking the show. So well done, Paris. Y'all did a great job. Now, let's do a quick breakdown of the show. The show starts out with the Tribal Thief versus the Tribal Chief. So you have Bronson Reed versus Roman Reigns. I thought this match was okay. I thought it was okay. One thing I noticed immediately was, you know how I feel about the advertisements in the ring, and we'll get to some of the other stuff later, but in the ring, you saw minimal advertising, I guess. Obviously, smack dab in the middle, you have the big logo for Riyadh season, which, fine, whatever, I don't even want to talk about that. But then, almost unreadable around the outside of the ring was Papa John's logo. So, two advertisements on your ring canvas, hey, I'll take it, because normally it's like six. And I think for SummerSlam, every single turnbuckle had a different advertisement on it. There was something on the turnbuckles, but I couldn't really make out what the heck any of it was. So in my opinion, they toned it down a little bit for this show, which I'm fine with. But anyway, for this match was okay. I did like the Samoan drop off the second rope, and Roman Reigns hits the spear. 1-2-3, Roman Reigns wins. I thought this was a great match, highlighting Bronson Reed. You put him against the OTC, and I thought he held his own. He put on a good match. I thought he looked good in defeat, and this is exactly what you need to do. You need to establish your heels as being able to go toe-to-toe with your main baby faces, and I thought that's exactly what this match did. I thought it helped him. Roman still gets the win. He gets his Shula Fala back, and then he puts Paul Heyman in the guillotine, and he basically puts him to sleep. And then you have the other member of the legal team, Bron Breakker, comes out. Nasty spot where Roman is signing the shoes from the Shula Fala and chucking them into the crowd. I thought that was really cool. And then out of nowhere, Bron Breakker comes and spears him through the announce table as he's doing the signing. It was awesome. And then total shenanigans, total beatdown ensues. You have both of the Bronson and Braun legal team just destroying him. It's tsunami after tsunami. The medical staff tries to put him on the backboard, Roman Reigns that is, and the spot where Bronson Reed hits the tsunami with Roman on the backboard was awesome. Jey Uso comes down, tries to help. He gets his ass kicked. And this is clear that you know as soon as he comes out that he is not winning your Fatal 4-Way in the main event because he gets his ass beat. I thought it was good. Well done. So I thought the match was pretty good. I thought it showcased Bronson in a favorable light. He was able to go toe-to-toe with Roman, even though Roman won. I thought it made Reed look strong. And then the post-match beatdown, exactly what you needed to do. So not bad. Tag team title, the Street Profits versus Wyatt Six. I must have missed something because all of a sudden the match hadn't even started and the Street Profits are kind of going at each other and they're already arguing. So you knew right away that they weren't winning nothing. And the Wyatt Six, Dexter Lumis, Joe Gacy, really like these guys. I think these guys are a very strong tag team. They put on really good matches, but I thought this match was like something you would see on SmackDown. So I'm not really sure what the point of this was. I know it's kind of just a card filler, but anyway. And then we have shenanigans by the Wyatt Six, Nikki Cross. She grabs onto Montez Ford's leg and Sister Abigail is hit by Uncle Howdy. It was a good match. It was fine. This goes back to the point I made before. Montez Ford needs to get away from this tag team. He needs to go solo. And I think you need to put the U.S. belt on him, the Intercontinental belt, give him some gold to shine a little bit, and then work him slowly up into the main title picture. This guy is a star. I don't know what they're waiting on. I think he puts on awesome matches. I think he has good chemistry. He's got good... you know, he's got the it factor. I think they need to start pushing him. Can we talk for a second about Angelo Dawkins? He comes out wearing one of the worst tank tops I have ever seen in my life. Now, Angelo Dawkins, hey, it is what it is, but he's a little bit on the heavier side. He's still athletic as hell. He does great stuff in the ring. I'm not saying he's not a good athlete, but he's rocking this tank top that is like super low cut that is barely covering anything, and it makes him look a little chunkier up top than I think he would want to look. I'm not sure who said, hey, this is a good look for you, but yeah, when you watch this back on tape, Angelo, I don't think you're going to be happy with your tank top selection. But anyway, I digress. So then we move on to, Street Profits lose, Wyatt Six retains. Hey, it is what it is. That's the right decision. I would like to see the Wyatt Six involved in some worthwhile feud outside of the three or four other tag teams that they just keep rotating through week after week. It's kind of stupid. The there's only like four teams on SmackDown that are vying for these titles, so it's already getting very boring. Next match, we had the Man, Becky Lynch versus Nikki Bella. And here is the foreshadowing moment of the night. I'm watching this with my wife, and my wife says, hey, has Becky Lynch ever done a program with her husband, who's obviously Seth Rollins? And I'm like, well, they kind of had a short little in-ring thing they did years back, but it was nothing. And so I was like, oh, that's interesting that she said that. And well, wasn't that awesome that that point was brought up? And 2 hours later, we're going to get to the finale in a minute here, but so crazy that it actually ended up working out that way. But anyway, this match was not for me. Nikki Bella, not sure why she's coming back. My whole thing watching this match, she's fine. She was fine when she was wrestling, but there are so many more deserving, more, how do I say this nicely, better women wrestlers than Nikki Bella that should be wrestling Becky Lynch right now. Why are we having this match? So I thought this match was kind of boring, and I just kept thinking there's way too many other women on this roster to be excited over than to sit here and watch Nikki Bella come back and fight. You knew she had no chance to win this match. So I'm just like, yeah, fine, whatever. The match was okay. It was whatever. And then side note, as I'm watching this pay-per-view, I'm sure you all have seen this by now, the green t-shirt guy in the front row, with the goatee and the baseball cap, that he's literally in the same seat show after show, month after month, year after year. And I'm just like, okay, there's no chance that this guy is getting these seats by himself. Everyone's like, oh, it's such a good story. He loves WWE. He's a lifelong fan. Yeah, well, we all do, but I can't afford $3,000 to $5,000 to sit in the front row. If not more than that, you go to your WrestleManias and your SummerSlams, we're talking $8,000-$10,000 sitting in the front row, and this guy's in the same seat every. What does he do? Is he a self-made billionaire? Like, what are we talking about? You're telling me he doesn't have an inside scoop with Triple H or WWE? Somebody's not feeding him these tickets? Because, sure, guy, you're kind of getting on my nerves. I know. I hear he's a wonderful fellow, but I'm just whatever. I would love to sit there. I'm a lifelong wrestling fan. Can I not? I got a podcast. Can I not be sitting in the front row as a member of the 3Ts? But I digress. No one is knocking down my door or calling me on the phone saying, hey, it's Trips. Would you like to come sit front row in Clash in Paris? I'll be like, let me think. Hell yeah, I would. So green t-shirt guy, congrats. I don't know how you managed to get that, but it must be nice to have that life. Anyway, we move on. The Rusev-Sheamus match, I mean, they beat the crap out of each other. The old-fashioned Donnybrook. There were some really sweet spots on this. The bar spot where Rusev throws Sheamus through the top of the bar. And I thought, like, ouch, that had to hurt. Because it didn't really break completely apart. And he's kind of like, I'm looking at this dude like, yikes, that has to hurt. He's literally inside of a wooden box, and that can't be too comfortable. But the white noise off the whiskey barrels through, and here's where the advertisement comes right back in, folks, the Slim Jim table. So my buddy texts me, and he's like, oh, I bet you, I know how you love the Slim Jim table spots. And I'm like, yeah, well, this is a Donnybrook match, right? If you're going to do the white noise, which is an awesome freaking spot, off whiskey barrels, why can't the table spot be sponsored by Woodford Reserve whiskey? Like that, now that would be awesome. I'm sick of Slim Jim. Slim Jim owns every table ever manufactured. What are we doing here? But anyway, this was a pretty good match. I thought they had the right winner picked. Rusev ends up winning because this is exactly what Sheamus needs to be doing. He needs to make these other guys look great, and that's what he did. He made Rusev look super strong. I thought they did a pretty good job with this match. They actually said at the end, because Sheamus ends up tapping out with the shillelagh in his mouth, and he's put in the accolade, whatever the hell his finishing move is. It's a submission move. But it's the only second time in his whole career he's ever tapped out. So way to make Rusev look super strong. Great match. They beat the crap out of each other. Is exactly what was needed. Hopefully this feud is done, because now at this point they've wrestled like 86 times. So it's time to move on. And then we get to the best, in my opinion, the night really starts to turn it on. Cena versus Logan Paul. Cena comes out and the place goes crazy. They go crazy. And they're singing along. Everyone's throwing the three-fingered salute in the air. And well-deserved, Cena. Like, so glad we got done with the heel turn. I know everyone loved to see it. It kind of overstayed its welcome and maybe didn't go off the way we all had hoped. And it was kind of a hot mess. But then you righted your errors, righted your wrongs, and now you came back. And this is what everyone wanted to see. They wanted to see the colors. They wanted to hear the songs. They wanted to cheer their ass off, you know, rooting for you and watching you with these matches. This was a great match. It started a little slow. Props to Logan Paul. You know, he puts on, like him or not, he puts on a good show. He puts on a good show. They had some crazy, crazy moves. Logan Paul does a Swanton Bomb. That was the first time I've seen him do that. He then does Cesaro's pop-up uppercut. So I'm like, oh, okay. He's starting to pull different moves into his moveset. And I'm fine. You want to take moves from people that are no longer in the WWE? Great. Jeff Hardy Swanton? Awesome. If you can add that safely to your repertoire, I'm all for it. He's a high flyer, so it makes sense. Cesaro's pop-up uppercut. Logan likes to throw a lot of haymakers and throw some, you know, he's got that the devastating punch. I think that's a great one to add. And then there's a spot where he's going for the five knuckle shuffle. He's stealing John Cena's five moves of doom. So he does the shoulder tackle. It was funny. It was a really funny spot. The Hurricane Rana into the Code Red. Cena was busting out some good moves here too. So, and then we see Cena hit the Styles Clash. Now, I'm always extremely nervous when someone goes for the Styles Clash, because I've seen a couple of the independent videos where this move is botched and somebody gets dropped right on their head. And the last thing I need to see is someone get paralyzed. But he hits the Styles Clash. It was pretty wild. But this was an awesome match. Awesome match. Everybody was extremely invested in this match. The crowd loved it. I thought it was awesome. Great job. Hats off. Well done, John Cena. Well done, Logan Paul. Y'all crushed it. Good job. Interested to see where they go next. I know they have WrestlePalooza on the horizon. We are less than, 3 weeks away from the show in Indianapolis. I wonder if Brock Lesnar is going to be the headliner with Cena, if that's where we're going to get that match, because you know that is lingering in the background after his appearance and F5 to Cena at SummerSlam. And then the main event, the Fatal 4-Way, the entrances were sick. The crowd was singing to everybody. It was just a super fun match. They all did real well trying to steal each other's finishers. Jay comes out with his ribs taped from the beatdown he took earlier in the main event, or in the first match of the night. And you knew he had no shot at winning, but everyone played their part well. And then, as I said before, you know, as my wife foreshadowed earlier in the night, you have the hooded figure come down, hit the nut shot on CM Punk, and it's none other than the man, Becky Lynch, helping her hubs out, you know, as she claims the hottest husband in the world, whatever she says. She helps the husband Seth Rollins out, and he told you, he's like, I'm two steps ahead of everybody. He said it earlier in the night, and I should have put two and two together, but awesome. I would love to see Becky Lynch added to the group, have her role with these guys and with Paul Heyman, and she's doing great work on the mic, and I think you pull her away, you add that gold of the Women's Intercontinental belt to this faction, and it's great. It's great. I think we've been waiting to see this for some time, and now we finally get it. Extremely well done. Extremely well done. All in all, oh, and how could I forget? How could I forget? They kept showing you Jelly Roll, who also has front row tickets, next to Post Malone. And man, Post Malone, I don't know what he was on, but he looked like he was on cloud nine from, let's just leave it at that. But anyway, those two guys must have been having a break from their big ass stadium tour, I think it's called. Anyway, Jelly Roll, thank God he didn't get involved. I did not want to see any of those shenanigans in the match. Thought it was a good show. I would say out of five, I would give it probably a three out of five. It was the first half of the show was whatever. Not much to write home about, but the last two matches, the Cena Paul and the Fatal 4-Way, great stuff. Great stuff. Well done. And then what else do I want to talk about? My wife and I finished the Netflix documentary Unreal. They had put out five episodes. I don't know if you all have seen this. I talked about it before. We watched the first couple episodes back on the pod, and I talked about it then, but it's a good show. It's a really good show. It ends with right up to and through WrestleMania, and so you see some of the storylines come together for that, focusing mostly on CM Punk, on Rhea Ripley. It was good. The one thing that by the end of the show, I said to my wife, I'm like, what's the deal with Triple H? Like, after each match, he's hugging all these wrestlers, specifically the females, like, and whispering sweet nothings in their ear, telling them how great they are one after the other. I'm like, at first, for the first couple episodes, you're like, okay, this is weird. But then he literally does it to every single one, and he's holding them close, and he's talking. So, you know, I'm like, this is kind of getting creepy. Can you maybe create some distance? Because, like, yeah. Yeah. And she goes, yeah, I wonder what Stephanie thinks watching this back. But I'm like, maybe there's, you know, no personal space in the WWE universe anymore. But I don't know. It was like, okay, we get it. You're this fatherly figure to everyone, but it's becoming borderline creepy. But anyway, that's what I saw. I thought it's a good watch. They're supposed to bring new episodes out next year, and that'll be exciting to see. I did appreciate the show, though. It was definitely a insightful look behind the curtain and seeing the goings on and how they come up with storylines and who's going to win and just what the day to day is for some of these guys and girls and what they're going through. It was definitely worth watching. So now let's switch our attention to the world of the Buffalo Bills. Bills Mafia, how the heck are we feeling? So much to talk about, Mafia. So much to talk about. The preseason concluded. We had preseason game 3 came and went against Tampa Bay. Much better showing than than game two. That was an absolute debacle. So I was glad to see that the team put on a much more respectable showing. You know, you got some guys get some work. Obviously, Shane Buechel played the whole game. He looked pretty good. We'll talk about the practice squad and the cuts and all that stuff here in a minute. But obviously, he looked good and solidified his role moving forward. He's actually going to be the starting quarterback for the practice squad. So job well done there. Deion Walker looked like a beast, wrecking havoc on almost every play that he was involved with this Tampa game. So that was pretty impressive. I was happy to see that. But basically, it just came down to I was happy to see a better showing. And the preseason finally is over. Before I get into the cuts and all that stuff, I'll just quickly talk about the episode 4 of Hard Knocks. We watched it last night. We're a little bit behind. I know it came out last Tuesday, but you know, life gets in the way and sometimes you can't sit down for some of this must-see TV. But we watched it last night. And, you know, it's the same thing that I keep going back to. If you watch it as a casual football fan, it's fine. If you watch it as a Bills fan who's significantly invested in this team, I guess it's still fine. Because I'm watching this episode last night, and while I think the episode was good, it was entertaining, but every single player they talk about has really no significant role on this team at all. They're talking about Zach Davidson, and he's, you know, he's the tight end, and he's punting, and they're talking about KJ Hamler and Jimmy Charo and Frank Gore Jr. and Casey Rogers. Well, then the cut list comes out, and the 53 is solidified, and none of these guys are on the team. None of them. So I'm watching this show, and I keep saying, where are all the guys I want to see? No, you're telling me you're having 5 episodes of Hard Knocks and you can't interview Keon Coleman? He's one of the most charismatic individuals, funny guys. Like, his commercials are funny. You want to hear him talk. You want to hear him engaged. You want to hear him. And I keep going back to the Milano thing. He's been on this team forever. Now, maybe these guys have to agree to do this. And maybe that's the deal. Maybe Milano's like, there ain't no way in hell I'm saying more than 5 words ever, so I'm not going to be on the show. And maybe that's the case. I get it. But it's hard to get invested watching these shows when you know none of these guys are going to be on the team. And that's exactly what happened. So they spent how much time talking about KJ Hamler? And so he's getting his scooter and it's getting stolen and he buys another one and everyone's joking and laughing. But the plays they show him, he's never making a play. So I'm watching the show going, well, you kind of aren't good. You're 4'2". I get it. You're fast, but you clearly have no hands because every ball that's thrown to you, you're dropping. So I'm supposed to believe that you have a shot of making the roster as the 5th or 6th wide receiver? No, it's just, I knew this was never going to work. And I guess if you just want to be entertained, great. But like I said, it's hard to be invested in a show like this when you know none of these guys are making the team. Jimmy Charlo, now obviously he didn't make the 53-man roster, but he did get signed to the practice squad. I think that's a little bit different of a story. I do like the whole Army thing and you know how he's staying late at the facility and he's basically living there because he's living out of a hotel and he's got nothing else to do, so why the hell not? But like the Frank Gore Jr., no, did anyone think Frank Gore Jr. was making this team over Ty Johnson, over Ray Davis? Like, it's just not happening. You know we carry 3 running backs. You know we carry a fullback. He's not making the team. I don't care how many carries and yards he has in the 3 preseason games. It's just not happening. But he looks exactly like his dad, by the way. So that's what I took from that part of the story. And then the Zach Davidson thing, great. You ride your mountain bike, awesome. You clearly didn't do anything because you're not even on the practice squad. And we'll never hear from Zach Davidson again. And then the other point that I took away from it, they're showing Tracy McGrady and Vince Carter, who are, you know, I guess part owners in the team now, part shareholders, whatever you want to call it. They're showing these guys on Hard Knocks more than they're showing certain other Bills players. There's just a huge section of this team you never see. And that's what I think is the most disappointing. I want to see Christian Benford. I want to see Terrell Bernard. I want to see some of the other linemen. We never see Kincaid. After the first 2 lines Dawson Knox gets in episode 1, you never see or hear from him again. And so it's a lot of time and investment in players that just don't have a huge future role with the team. And that's fine. It's whatever. I get it. It's for entertainment. And like I said, maybe some of these other guys just didn't agree to be recorded or taped, but it is what it is. So anyway, we got 1 more episode to go that comes out tomorrow. We shall see how that ends. And then we can finally turn our attention to the regular season because we are here, folks. We are finally here. We are finally ready to go. In less than a week, we will be hosting Baltimore Ravens Sunday night, 8:20 kickoff in Orchard Park at Highmark Stadium. And there is so much on the line for this. So much on the line for this. So the 53-man roster came out. We obviously, there was not a ton of surprises. Tyrell Shavers made the team as the as a wide receiver. But other than that, not a whole lot going on. We still don't know too much about Trey White's injury, but he was not put on IR, so it can't be as bad as we see there. Maxwell Harrison, he did get put on IR, so I think the plan is that he can't play for at least 4 weeks, and then his practice window opens, so it would not shock me if he comes back after the bye week and he's ready to roll there with the suspended player. So I'm looking at this team and the potential injuries, and I'm like, is the first 6 weeks kind of turning into, can we just hang on and survive? Because we got a ton of replacements on the way, a ton of replacements with Okungjobi and Michael Hoyt and Maxwell Harrison. And I don't know what's going to happen if Trey White's not playing week one against the Ravens. I think there's still a lot of unknown, and I know it's early in the week, and we'll hear more of the injury report as we get to Thursday, Friday. Obviously Tyler Bass, I know I didn't mention him in preseason three, but yikes. I know he made some kicks and he missed the one at the end, but he does not look right to me. I don't know what's going on. I know they brought in some kickers to try out. I don't know what's happening there. And of course, Jordan Poyer was brought back to the practice squad. Now, the Jordan Poyer thing, people are going crazy over this. Why are we bringing Jordan Poyer back? Well, listen, he's going on the practice squad. Everyone take a deep breath. Settle the hell down. Think of it this way. You have a very young secondary. Outside of DeMar, you have a young secondary. And if you put Jordan Poyer on the practice squad, to me, it's like having an extra coach. You have a guy that was in this system playing on this team, playing under this coaching staff for years. And so I think bringing him to the practice squad, it gives a way for him to kind of mentor some of the younger guys. I think pairing him with Cole Bishop, being his tutor, his whatever, another set of eyes for him, another voice to kind of instruct him and guide him and prepare him for teams like Baltimore. What is the harm? So everyone needs to freaking relax. It's okay. And if, God forbid, if he needs to, here's the thing. Would you rather, right? We did a would you rather section a couple episodes back. Would you rather have DeMar Hamlin or Jordan Poyer starting for you at safety? I don't know what the answer to that question is, but as much everyone loves DeMar, but can anyone really say that they're feeling okay if he's the starting safety on the football team? I don't know. So if it comes down to it, do you want Poyer or Hamlin? I don't know. I don't know what the answer is to that, but I see no problem with bringing this guy back to the practice squad. But yeah, we are in full season mode here. We are all gas, no brakes, as Jacob Fatu said. We are flying through this week, and we are full steam ahead to Sunday night. One other thing that came out this week was the rivalry uniform reveal. If you haven't gotten to see this, run to the social medias and look up the Bills rivalry jersey, because I think they absolutely crushed it with this one. Crushed it. Now, if you look at some of the other ones in the league, I don't know. Some of them look terrible. Miami, y'all can't seem to get anything right because that jersey is trash. Trash. It looks like you're going to play for the Miami Marlins. I don't know what kind of color schemes they got going down in Miami, but that looks terrible. But the Bills jersey looks amazing. I love the snow look. I love the ice look. I love the color scheme. I think it's fire. The one thing that really pissed me off, though, it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. Have you guys seen the Tom Brady social media video where he, and this is a total plant, of course, but someone presents him with the new Bills jersey, the new rivalry jersey, and he's like, oh, this is a good jersey. And then he proceeds, this freaking clown, he proceeds to sign a Bills jersey. Who is allowing anyone, who is allowing Tom Brady to sign a Buffalo Bills jersey, first of all? But he then proceeds to sign it after he goes, hold on a second, I got to look something up. He then proceeds to sign it 33-3 as his record against Buffalo. God, what is wrong with this guy? I freaking hate him. If you don't, and I know, oh, it's he's their mortal enemy. He's like the wrestling heel of the against the Buffalo Bills. Well, you know what? I just want someone to freaking power slam him. Can we bring back Braun Strowman and just have him do the train thing and shoot Tom Brady to the freaking moon because I'm so sick and tired of it. The timing of this was so bad, right? They just dropped the video showcasing these awesome, awesome jerseys. And within hours, Tom Brady's posting this stupid video where he's signing this jersey 33-3. And I'm just like, dude, does anyone out there actually think he's a good person? Because I think he's a terrible human being. I'm just going to plant my flag. I've thought this forever. I think he's fake as hell. I don't want to see him. He's everywhere now. He's buying card shops. He's in, you know, you want to talk about crossing the T's. He's not only did I have to deal with him on the football field, but now I got to deal with him in the hobby industry. Oh my God, I can't freaking stand this guy. That really pissed me off. We get super excited about a new jersey and Tom Brady's there to freaking ruin it. Of course he is, because he can't stay out of anything. Oh my God, just go the hell away. Anyway, how are we feeling heading into the season? I have concerns on the defensive side. I will be completely honest with you. I have concerns with the secondary, and I have concerns with our starting safeties. Cole Bishop can't stay healthy. Taylor Rapp, well, if you watched last year, it seems like Taylor Rapp don't know how to tackle without leading with his head. So he usually plays a quarter of every game, and then he concusses himself right off the field. So I don't know what we're doing with the back end of the secondary, but Hairston needs to get healthy ASAP. We need to get some more depth there. That's my concern heading into the Ravens game. I think this Ravens game is going to be super close. As I said before, I am more worried about this Ravens game than I am any game on the schedule. It's kind of scary and frightening that the most important game, in my opinion, is right out of the blocks. Right off Jump Street, we're playing, in my opinion, the other challenger for the number one seed in the AFC. And you know what's funny? I just saw this article that talks about they rank the preseason favorites, right? They do a power ranking. So where does each team sit heading into the 2025 season? And they do a power rankings. They put Philadelphia number one. Well, guess who's sitting at number two? They put the Chiefs as preseason ranked number two. And you know what they put at the little blurb? They say, Rashee Rice getting suspended for the first six games of the season is a big hit to the Chiefs offense, but it's not enough to knock last year's runners up out of the number two spot. And then they finish it by saying this: their revenge tour starts Friday night against the Chargers in Brazil. Revenge tour? Are we doing this again where it's the Chiefs versus the world and no one believes in us and blah, 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 blah? Oh my God, with this every year, they somehow managed to turn the narrative that the Chiefs are the underdog and no one believes in the Chiefs. And it's like, what are you talking about? You've been to a billion Super Bowls in the last 10 years. You've won a bunch of them. How are you possibly carrying the flag and planting the flag that you're the underdog and the revenge tour is starting? Get off my TV. I don't know what's worse, the Chiefs or Tom Brady. I want both of these things to never exist again. It's infuriating. If money were no object, hey, I'm doing it on the spot. If money were no object, buy the week. I'm going to buy the Chiefs and I'm going to decommission them and never have them play again. That's what I'm doing. So however much money it costs me to buy the Chiefs, what is it, $1 billion? Sure. I'm going to buy the Kansas City Chiefs. I'm going to move them to Antarctica. I'm going to place them all in freaking igloos and there, play from Antarctica and see how that works. Now you want to talk revenge tour? Go ahead. Play against the freaking Penguins and, well, I don't know, do whales live up in Antarctica? I don't even care. I don't want to see this team. I don't want to see Tom Brady ever again. So, oh, the God. I'm like, the revenge tour? Are you all kidding me? I can't. If I turn on Friday night's game, which I think is a prime Amazon game, if I turn on this game, because I think who are they playing? They play the Chargers, and I hope the Chargers can get their heads out of their asses finally and actually beat the Chiefs. But if I turn this game on and I'm hearing the color commentator telling me how much of an underdog the Chiefs are this year, I think I'm going to turn this season off and not watch anything outside of the Bills games because I can't stand these clowns. Is there anything else you can talk about that is actually true? Because this narrative that Kansas City is an underdog and they have to get revenge is just ridiculous. So anyway, that's where I'm at with that. I've had enough of the Chiefs, enough of Tom Brady, but I'm super looking forward to the Bills season. As we get into it, we're going to try to break down each and every game a little bit, because I'm super smart when it comes to breaking down football analysis. But I'm going to give you my opinion. I'm going to tell you what I see. I can't wait to be there in Orchard Park at 8:20. That's going to be a fire game. Cannot wait to see where we go from there. But let's turn our attention to the card collecting world, card marks, hobby enthusiasts, how are we feeling? So much stuff came out. So much stuff has dropped in the last week. One thing that was kind of infuriating as a card enthusiast, Topps put a social media post out in which they listed the prices and the dates of every product that was coming out last week. And so this was crazy to me. The first thing they list, 2025 Topps Chrome Disney. This is going to be a good product. Disney does really well. Hobby Box. You ready for this, folks? You ready for this price? They're listing a Hobby Box of Disney Chrome for $399. $400. So you think, well, I might get like 100, 120 cards. Nope. You get 48 cards. 48 cards in a $400 Hobby Box? Are you out of your freaking minds? Insane. Insane. So you didn't like that? Well, here, I got another one for you. 2025 Topps Chrome Baseball Sapphire. The Sapphire looks pretty cool, right? But you're thinking, oh, this might be something I want to get an investment in. Maybe I'll go buy a box. Well, you better have $480 set aside, because that's how much Topps Chrome Sapphire cost you. And how many cards you get? 80, 100, 120? Nope, 32 cards. So if 48 for 400 wasn't bad enough, here's 32 cards for 480. 480 for 32 cards. What the hell are we doing? Oh my goodness. This is an episode I'm losing my mind. I'm losing my mind. So much to be fired up about. You don't want that? Okay, no problem. Here's 2025 Topps Chrome Baseball Logo Fractor Series. Logo Fractor for the low price of $120. Oh, okay. We're starting to get back in a reasonable ballpark. How many cards do I get with that? 30, 40, 50 cards? Nope. You get 10 cards. 10 cards for $120. Do the quick math. That's pretty pricey. And then to finish this awesome thing out, we get 2025 Topps Chrome WWE Cactus Jack. I've already talked about this before. I was actually shocked to see this price. I thought it was going to be $600, but it's actually $450. And you get 80 cards. So compared to the other products, $450 for 80 cards? Oh, well, maybe I'll get two. Maybe I'll get two boxes of this nonsense. But I saw some of this product open, and as I told you all before, I can't stand it. I don't like the colors. I think it looks like I'm in a sewer looking at these cards. Like, is the lighting off? Am I misreading these cards? These look terrible. They look terrible. They look like they've been dug up from the dirt. They're all dark and the sepia tones. It's like, are you going to go get one of those old time photos at the beach and your family's going to put on the stupid cowboy or settler uniform and stand there with your rifles and look menacing, like, and it cost you $100 to get a family photo taken? That's what I see when I'm looking at these cards. Cactus Jack, WWE Chrome, $450, 80 cards. Yikes. The best one of the bunch, because they also put the Green Day Garbage Pail Kids in there. I'm thinking, oh, this is a steal. $80 for 50 cards, but they're Garbage Pail Kids. So collectability, who knows? I did see one, though, that had the actual guitar strings from one of the band members embedded in the card. So as far as music relics, which I want to see more of, I really hope Topps gets on the ball and really pushes forward more music crossovers, more music cards, music sets. I think it's awesome. I love that card. That card was fire. But $80, 50 cards, I don't know how you feel about that. But compared to these other ones, that's an absolute freaking steal. So you might want to jump all over that. But I'm looking at this and I'm like, am I done as far as being a consumer of these new products? Am I done? How can you justify spending this kind of money? Now, this coming week, there's a ton of products that are coming out this week that I'm super excited about. Topps dropped the info that Topps Chrome SpongeBob set is coming out. Now, I know you'll probably laugh at me, but SpongeBob, when my kids were little, SpongeBob was the ish, if you will. Like, that was the cartoon. I have seen probably every episode of the first, I don't know, 5-6 seasons. We watched them on repeat. We had the DVDs. It was must-see TV. My kids and I are watching SpongeBob. So those characters have a lot of, you know, nostalgic, memorable meanings to me. And so I am dreading this product coming out. Now, they're doing one of the EQL, I think it's called. You have to put in your name to a drawing. And then if you're selected, your account already gets charged. So of course they don't tell you what the price is going to be until it goes live. And then it's the FOMO thing we've talked about before. Once they got you on the hook, they're like, oh, you're going to buy a box. There's nothing you could do about it. And it's $8 billion. And you're like, well, I guess I got to buy a box of SpongeBob cards for $8 billion. And then next thing you know, you're like, oh, now I can't pay my mortgage. But It's crazy to me. I am super looking forward to the SpongeBob set. I hope it comes out at a reasonable price. The other one, Topps Finest WWE, they are claiming that this is also coming out soon, and you could put your name in the drawing for that next week. I think it's Tuesday. I actually think this is tomorrow. So one comes out at noon and 1 o'clock, or maybe it's 1 and 2. So two big, huge products dropping within an hour of each other, both on the, you know, you got to put your name in the drawing, but we shall see. They are telling you nothing about how much these products cost. And these are big products, because outside of the Cactus Jack nonsense, we haven't seen some WWE product since January, which is ridiculous, because now we're in September and they promised us 5 WWE releases. I really hope the Cactus Jack wasn't one of them, but Topps Finest, the cards, I have seen some of the cards. They look way better than the Cactus Jack set. So I'm hoping these aren't $1 billion. I'm pretty excited about that, but I got to tell you, folks, the SpongeBob set, I hope this is reasonably priced, because I would love to get a hobby box of that. Anyway, I think that's going to wrap up this episode of Tables, Tailgates, and Top Loaders. I appreciate you all very much for stopping in and checking it out. If you've enjoyed this episode or any episode of the 3Ts podcast, please hook a brother up and share it with someone you know, whether they are a fellow Mafia member, an avid card collector, or someone who just loves professional wrestling. It doesn't matter. Help me out. Help out your boy. I'm trying to grow this thing one episode at a time. And please hit that follow. Leave me a review wherever you get your podcast. Tell somebody you know. Tell somebody you don't know. It don't matter. Help your boy out. I appreciate you all very, very much. So until next time, whether it's ripping packs, breaking tables, or dropping elbows, keep doing what you love. And as always, go Bills.